On the bridge of his star destroyer, Nils Barr watched as the logs of the various monitors and pickets were replayed for him on the main view screen, showing the probes from a variety of perspectives. Darbillet urged Nils Barr to consider the possibility that the probes were a trap.
Darama, their purpose could be to draw us away and leave this Bond world unprotected.
Nils Barr cut him off.
There are ships enough for both duties. The flagship of the Protectorate need fear no enemy. We will move to intercept.
With a slow grace, the bow of the Great Star Destroyer swung out and upward, bringing the triangle of enemy probes to the center of the main viewpane. Then that triangle of space began to roil and dance with light. As warship after warship appeared within the triangular area marked out by the three probes, Nils Barr edged forward in his chair with eager glee in his eyes.
Yes, come, come. What a glorious victory you will give us. There will be honor for every Yavetha today.
Darbillet ordered the interdictor Splendor of Yavetha forward into the lead spot to protect the flagship from any sneak attacks from hyperspace. The flagship and its companions were held at a crawl while the balance of the home fleet rose from orbit to join them. Meanwhile, the count of the approaching armada continued to climb, topping 200 before the entry flashes finally ceased.
Darama, there is a signal from the vermin, announced the proctor of communication.
Nils Barr rose from his couch.
I will hear them for my amusement.
He settled back as a voice began.
This is General Etan Abbat, commander of the New Republic Combined Forces in Farlax. This is my final warning to the Duskan League. You are called to account for your crimes against the peaceful peoples of Cornacht. You must give up the territory you seized by force. You must surrender all hostages unharmed.
Syl Soranen witnessed the arrival of the New Republic fleet on the three-dimensional monitors in the flagship's fire control center. It was from that room that Pride of Yavetha's individual batteries would be assigned targets. Those decisions were in the hands of the three Yavethan officers seated at the consoles in the pit. Saranen's responsibility ended at maintaining the data server for the target registry and its electronic links throughout the ship. Still, he studied the holographic image map and listened to General Abbat with as much intent as did the Yavetha. When the general finished speaking, there was a long silence as everyone waited for Nils Barr's reply. As the minutes dragged out and the distance between the fleets continued to shrink, Syl Soranen brought a comb out of his pocket and ran it through his thinning red hair. He knew that Nils Barr's silence was an expression of contempt for his adversaries, but he was also confident that the Viceroy would not be able to resist expressing his contempt directly. But when the most powerful weapons on Pride of Yavetha, on Intimidator, Soranen thought, reminding himself of the ship's original name, were only a minute away from being able to deliver an effective blow to the nearest of the New Republic vessels, he could wait no longer. Holding the comb in both hands, he twisted it sharply, and it came apart. One of the pieces was a thin wand with three small buttons. Keeping his eye on the proctors and the holotracks, Soranen picked up the stolen blaster that had been hidden in a small service panel. Nils Barr began to broadcast his answer of defiance.
You are low and impure creatures, and your threats mean nothing to me. Your presence fouls the perfection of the All and offends the honor of the Blessed. Your bodies will fall into the sun and be consumed. You will be forgotten by your offspring, and your mates will bring new blood to their beds.
Fool, Soranen thought. They have your fleet outgunned 3-1. Soon to be 5-1.
He pressed the first two buttons on the wand with his thumb, then raised the blaster to shoulder level and began to fire. Abbat listened to Nils Barr's screed with his jaw set in a grim expression and the last flickers of hope dying in his eyes.
That's that. Bring all the batteries up to full power.
General, called the tactical officer. All the Imperial-type ships are slowing. The Super, the Interdictor, the SDs, all of them, they're just sitting there. The T-types are hard for us to knock out, but the Imperial designs have more punch.
Abbat stared at the tactical display.
Are any of the T-types holding off?
No, they're still coming on.
Abbott frowned.
Maybe there's been a falling out between friends. Let's see if we can aggravate it. Task forces, Black Vine, Apex, Keyhole. The leashes are off. Pursue and engage.
There were 513 Black Sword Command veterans aboard Pride of Yvetha, and more than 15,000 Yvetha. Those proportions did not trouble Major Saranen. The ship was under their control. Dealing with its last owners was a mere detail. There was a precious irony, he thought, that the principal instrument of their freedom was something called a slave circuit. He punched some buttons.
General Abbott, can you hear this transmission?
This is Abbott. Please, identify yourself.
Proudly, General. This is Major Syl Saranen of the Black Sword Command, Imperial Navy, acting captain of the Star Destroyer Intimidator and commodore of the Kampal Squadron.
I am not familiar with your unit, Major.
Saranen laughed stiffly.
It's newly commissioned, General.
If your intentions are not hostile...
It is not that we have any more love for you now than when we last faced you, but we won't fight to defend our enslavers.
Keep to, and you won't be harmed.
Oh, no. We've been here too long already. Nearly 13 years on a 9-month detail. No, General, this is goodbye. We are taking back what is ours, starting with our freedom and these ships. We leave the Yvetha to you.
He pressed the middle and third buttons on the wand, and an unjammable hypercom signal leapt across the emptiness to slave circuits buried deep in the command architecture of every Imperial warship deployed at Nazoth and its daughter worlds across the cluster. Autopilots calculated jump vectors and hyperdrive motivators called on the immense power of solar ionization reactors. Space trembled, twisted, and yawned open around the accelerating warships.
Moments later, Black Sword Command's withdrawal from Kornak Cluster was complete.
Cheering broke out on the Bridge of Intrepid as the heart of the Yvethan fleet vanished from the tracking displays, but Abbott quickly put a stop to it.
We have no way of verifying what we just heard. Those ships could jump out half a light year and return on our flank. Moreover, there are still 44 T-types out there. This is not over.
Indeed, it was not. Minutes later, Colonel Corgan reported,
Targets 18, 20, and 21 just opened fire on the phantom elements of Task Force Token.
Abbott studied the tactical display.
We must neutralize this force without compromising our unit integrity or our mobility. Pass the word as follows. Hold back the bombers. Keep the patrol screens close and launch the A-wing interceptors only in response to direct threat from other little birds. Our operational unit for this engagement is to be the fleet squadron. Squadron commanders now have operational autonomy. All units pursue, engage, and destroy all targets of opportunity. Since they insist on a fight, we'll give them one.
The commencement of hostilities had not meant the end of Wialu's efforts. To Luke's surprise, she continued the illusion of the phantom warships even as ion and laser cannon began to light up space all around them. Akana whispered to him,
She told me that she would maintain the protection as long as she could, even if the Yvetha did not surrender.
But as the battle wore on and broken and burning warships began to dot the starry backdrop, Wialu began to sag. Finally, moments after a New Republic light escort blew up just a few kilometers away, she slumped forward on the deck, and the phantoms vanished from the New Republic formations. Even then, she declined to be helped from the observation deck.
I will watch to the end,
she insisted. The outcome of the Battle of Nazoth had been foreordained from the moment Syl Saranen departed with the Black Sword vessels, but it was no less brutal or difficult for that. The reports that began to come in from the intelligence sources scattered through the outer regions of the Kornak Cluster were all the same and mirrored the experience at Nazoth. The Imperial ships orbiting the destroyed colonies had jumped out without apparent cause, but not a single Yvethan vessel had surrendered or fled. Every last thrust ship had fought relentlessly until it was destroyed. Abbott had never seen the like of it in 30 years of soldiering, and it left him shaken.
It has always been enough in the past to defeat the enemy,
he said to Morano in the privacy of the now quiet Situation Room.
I've never known an enemy who forced me to utterly destroy him. If they had given me any chance to spare them, shown any hesitation, even just broken contact and fallen back...
Morano shook his head. You can't show mercy to someone who's going for your throat. Nilspar's arms were bound at his sides, his claws locked helplessly against the restraining bar. His ankles were manacled together with a plasteel cable. Even so, he tried to lunge at Silsaranen when the Imperial officer appeared in the bridge's escape pod access tunnel. The lunge did not carry him far. It was not even necessary for anyone to shoot the Viceroy. One of the four witnesses simply hooked Nilspar's ankle cable with his foot, bringing the Yveatha down hard on the deck. Saranen stepped closer. For 12 years of torture and the deaths of too many friends, there isn't enough I can do to you. I already know that killing you won't be satisfying, but still, you deserve to die. And the only thing I can think of that will help me answer those faces that come into my mind is to make you wait for it. And make sure that my face stays in your mind while you wait. So here's something you should know about me. Before I joined Black Sword Command, I was detailed to the research section as a pilot for the experimental hyperphysics team. We were trying to learn how to drop bombs from hyperspace. We never learned how. Saranen crouched by Nilspar's head. You see, it turns out that no matter which way you go through the magic door, you need a hyperdrive to open it. Anything that we released in hyperspace just stayed there. He stood up again and unlatched the hatch of escape pod 001. It's really too bad the project didn't work out. Saranen stepped back while Nilspar was dragged to his feet. Because it turns out to be very easy to release an object in hyperspace. One good shove will do it. Like the ejection charge of an escape pod, for example. The Viceroy stood tall and silent, his expression one of contempt and haughty pride. Saranen leaned his face close to Nilspar's. I don't know how long you will survive there. I do know that you will die there. Stepping back, the Major watched as the others forced Nilspar into the escape pod and sealed him inside. Die slowly. Saranen slammed his hand down the firing switch. With a roar, the escape pod hurtled away into oblivion. The insights Lobot was gleaning from his contact with the Vagabond seemed far more meaningful than the ones he was managing to communicate to Lando.
It doesn't know what it is, Lobot. It only knows what it does.
But even within those parameters, what the Vagabond told Lobot seemed all too changeable, subject not only to interpretation, but to Lobot's errors of enthusiasm. According to Lobot, the ship was a protect against harm. A shelter and nurture, a heal and succor, a flee from predators, a maintain and preserve, and a welcome and teach, which Lobot variously interpreted as egg, mother, creche, repository, and chrysalis. The rounded bodies in the inner tubules were sleepers, keepers, corpses, sacrifices, and directors, with half of those designations suggesting they were part of the vessel and half suggesting they were something apart. Lando became increasingly frustrated by these kinds of explanations, but Lobot insisted he could not be any more specific.
I don't think it knows any more. Its reflexes are complex and elegant, and it has great power at its command. But I don't think it even realizes where it is, any more than a seed buried in the ground does.
Suddenly, there was an unprecedentedly violent shaking of the Vagabond as it exited from hyperspace, and Lando had a revelation. I've figured out why the jumps keep getting rockier. The ship's power reserves must be way down.
The Vagabond does not have generators.
Lando shrugged. Whatever, take it as a metaphor.
We're in some sort of energy conservation mode. It's not just hurting, it's tired.
Yes. She and I have talked about that.
Lando looked at him with a touch of annoyance. Now, you might have shared that part with me. Lobot, it won't be long before this ship's not going to be able to open a big enough hyperspace portal fast enough to minimize stress. And either the middle of the ship will jump out and leave the rest behind, or the portal will snap back and crush it.
Lobot considered this scenario.
That is something I would prefer to witness from a distance.
Yet in line behind me. That's why you have to link up with your friend. We need to know where we are and what's going to be happening.
I can try.
Lobot began stripping off his suit so he could enter the inner passages. Before long, he emerged from the inner portal.
Any luck? Lando asked.
I am not certain. It said we should go back to the auditorium. At least I think that's where we're to go. As best as I can translate, it called that chamber the reflection of the essential infinities.
But the orrery was destroyed.
Perhaps not rebuilding it was a choice, not a necessity.
All right, let's go find out. When all four members of the quartet were clinging somewhere on the auditorium's inner face, the chamber's outer face once again underwent the transformation to a great transparent panel. Once more, they found themselves suspended in space, looking down on a planet, and beyond it to the disk of a blue star.
What's going on here? Lando cried in dismay. Lobot, this is a different planetary system. This planet is an ice ball, and the other planet had two moons.
He squinted.
But there is something in orbit, something tiny.
Lando, what we saw the first time was Kella as it was when the vagabond last saw it. What we see now is Kella as it now appears.
Artu says, however, that he can identify four of the minor elements moving in the vicinity of the planet. The largest and closest of them
is this ship, Lobot exulted. Lando, it's a real-time tracking display.
The other objects are all orbiting the planet. In increasing order of size, they are a New Republic Engineering Orbital Relay Satellite, a Soros Sub PLY 3000, and a Dobrutz DB4 Starliner.
Just a Soros Sub 3000? That's Lady Luck! I can't believe it! We're going to get out of here!
Only Lobot did not join in the celebration.
Lando, please, wait. There's still something very wrong. If this is Kella, where are the moons of Martha Obex?
From aboard Lady Luck, Pakpakat and his crew watched as the vagabond made its approach to Martha Obex at high speed.
What do you think this is about?
Pakpakat looked around at the others.
Anyone?
Tysden answered.
A very detailed surface scan. She's looking for something.
Then Tysden, it appears that the vessel's present orbit will bring her very close to us shortly before she crosses the Terminator.
60 kilometers, said Tysden. And within 60 kilometers of Pengarif, 19 hours after that.
Pakpakat hissed and shook himself. It went against both habit and nature for him to take the initiative in such a situation.
We may have no choice but to call attention to ourselves in one way or another. Page the vagabond on the frequency Calrissian was using for his suitcom. Bounce the page through the Pengarif satellite.
Moments later, they heard Lando Calrissian's voice.
Pakpakat, what are you doing on my ship? General Calrissian, we have been looking for you ever since your escape. We believe we have a complete Kella genetic sequence, and we have an autoresponder set up. I understand you must be eager to get out, but can you hold out a few more hours so we have a chance to, as someone once suggested I might consider, pick a lock rather than blow one up?
Lando sighed, knowing he was talking about Admiral Drayson.
I bow to the indisputable wisdom of your advisor. We can hold out a bit longer.
Hour after hour, the vagabond searched the surface of Martha Obex, waiting for the cue that would tell it what to do next. 5 times before it had come here, obediently following the plan built into its very substance, trying to keep an appointment with those who had shaped it and sent it into the void. 5 times it had lingered, searching, waiting. 5 times it had gone away again, not aware enough to be disappointed, but knowing that its purpose was unfulfilled. At the appointed time, the vagabond began singing. And for the first time in all its journeys home, an answer came. But the answer did not come from Brathkella. It came from one of the tiny creatures sharing the circles above Brathkella, the homestone. And the answer was sung harshly, without the gentle strength of Brathkella. The vagabond searched its memories and knew the answer to be form without substance, a predator's lure. And there were imperatives concerning predators. When the vagabond finally broke its silence and broadcast a 14-second interrogative, only Tysden was on the flight deck to hear it. His alarm roused the others, including Eccles, from their pursuits and brought them running. "I don't know what the question was, but we are responding," Tysden told them. "And the target is changing orbit and accelerating."
Pakrikat stared.
"Towards us?"
"Towards the archaeologist's relay satellite."
At that moment, a blue glow appeared at the vagabond bow, making it suddenly bright both through the view screens and on the monitors. Then 3 slender but brilliant beams of energy slashed across the darkness and came together at a point 3,409 kilometers away. Where they converged, there was a small explosion, intense enough to leave an after image in their eyes. Then the glow vanished and the lances disappeared, leaving behind a spreading cloud of atomized plasteel and metal, once a relay satellite.
"General," said Pakpakat, "this is Lady Luck. Why are you firing on us?"
Lando replied fiercely.
"It wasn't our doing. What did you say to it?"
Eccles spoke shakily. "Colonel, whatever message we sent was not taken well."
Eccles contacted his crew aboard the Penga Rift and ordered them to leave orbit immediately and jump out to the agreed coordinates for a rendezvous. Tysden reported,
"The target is accelerating toward Operational Relay Satellite 1, which is currently relaying the Kella database."
Pakpakat shouted, "Is there any spare bandwidth on ORS-1?
"I can make some," said Tysden.
"I want to talk to Carizian."
The agent's fingertips danced over the controls.
"General Carizian, I don't know how long we'll be able to talk. Do you know of any weakness or vulnerability of the vagabond we can exploit?"
"Yes, blaster cannon, cruiserweight and up. The hull's not armored, and there don't seem to be ray shields. You can hold it and hurt it. But you have to get in the first shot and make it good."
They could hear a second voice saying,
"Lando, she does not deserve this."
Eccles found his own voice of protest.
"This is completely unacceptable, Colonel. This artifact is unique, irreplaceable."
"And deadly,"
said Pakpakat. He gestured to Tysden.
"Hypercom, secure to Regan. This is Colonel Pakpakat commanding Telticon Task Force at Multha Obex. We found the vagabond and made contact with the team aboard. But the target has turned hostile."
The flight deck was suddenly flooded with light, marking the precipitous disappearance of another satellite.
"Requesting immediate assistance and support," Pakpakat finished.
The morning after the Battle of N'Zoth, the Kelplath Corporation liner Star Morning entered the system and requested a rendezvous with Intrepid for a passenger pickup. Wialu sent Luke a message requesting that he come to the cabin she and Akana shared. He found the women preparing to leave. Akana greeted him with an eager embrace.
"Did you hear? Our ship will be here in about an hour."
Luke turned to Wialu. "You're going back to Jitipatan."
"We're going away," she said. "It is time for us to find a quieter place."
Luke's gaze narrowed. "And so the Falanasi disappear again?"
"We do not require or desire the attention of outsiders," said Wialu. "And events have already cost us much privacy. We will go away long enough to earn it back."
Luke turned his gaze on Akana. "I don't suppose I was expecting an invitation to come along." She smiled sadly.
I wish that I could finish what I started. It was unfair for me to promise that I would teach you our way, not knowing if there would be a chance to keep it.
Unfair, Luke repeated. I'm not sure that's a strong enough word. Because you made me another promise, the one that brought me on this journey. You promised to help me find my mother. And you must have known that you couldn't keep it, that I'd run into a wall of silence if we found the circle.
Akana looked away uncomfortably, then sank down onto the edge of the bunk.
I know nothing about your mother, Luke. And I have not told you the truth about mine.
All of Luke's emotions, save for curiosity, were numbed by her words. What does your mother have to do with this?
You remember what I told you of how it was for me, living on the underside of Karatos, and how my caretaker took my money and left me there.
Tell Saba, I remember.
Akana met his eyes.
Everything I told you about her is true, except that she was my real mother. Isola Talsava Norand was the one who brought the Empire down on the circle.
Luke sank into a chair. Wialu took up the narrative.
We could not allow Isola to remain with the circle after her betrayal. She refused our offer to raise her daughter, and she took Akana away with her. I made Akana a promise that the way back would be marked for her, so that she could rejoin the circle.
Luke looked at Akana, unsmiling. So why did you make me part of your effort? You didn't need me to find the Falanasi. The Imperial agents on Lukazik, they were another lie, weren't they? We were never being hunted.
She admitted.
No, it was a test. I had to know who you were, what I could expect from you, where to begin.
What was the deception meant to gain you?
Luke, I have seen the underside of war, where there are no heroes, only victims. I have good reason to fear power.
You thought, think, I posed the same kind of threat as the Emperor?
I had to see what inside you balances the power you have. I had to see what I could give you of what the Circle had given me. I did not lie to you about my purpose. Something has been missing, something of the light, something of peace, of acceptance. I tried to help you find it.
And Nashira was nothing but your fantasy, a reflection of what I wanted her to be.
No, she was more than that. Akana,
Wialu said in a cautionary tone.
I have to tell him. A secret is too much like another lie.
She stood.
A woman came to see Isola on Karatos. She was Falanasi, but I did not know her. She stayed with us for 5 days and spent hours talking with my mother.
Then she turned toward Wialu.
I think that she was sent by the circle to try to persuade my mother to let me go. This woman's circle name was Nashira. She was beautiful and kind to me. She shared her heart with me. She said that the Emperor had taken her children from her, a boy and a girl. And all she could do was try to love the children who were near her and hope that someone was doing the same for hers. When you asked me about your mother, I pictured the woman I wished had been mine. I told you about Nashira.
Luke shook his head.
But it was all about you, your pain, your fantasies.
Are they so different from yours? I have seen inside your heart, too, Luke Skywalker. I could only deceive you with the truth.
Luke looked to Wialu. You must think me a fool, chasing after the phantom she created.
Thank you for the wake-up call. I wish you luck in coaxing her off Isola's path and onto yours.
Stepping forward bravely, Akana lightly touched Luke's breastbone.
Please, don't judge us by my example. I beg you not to reject the truth because of the lie that preceded it. I never wanted to add to your pain.
Luke covered her hand with his own.
It seems I must choose what to believe, he said at last. I will try to believe that first, and perhaps it will guide me through the rest.
Akana looked up at him gratefully.
Then I can go now, she said,
and kissed his cheek softly before backing away.
There were messages for Luke in the comm shack, but nothing from Leia.
The chief librarian's office on Abroa Sky advised him that his request for a contract researcher had moved up to number 5 on the waiting list, and he should be certain he had the research subject Phalaenopsis clearly defined. The senior rehab therapist on board the medical frigate High Haven passed on the word that Han was being transferred back to the fleet hospital on Coruscant. The final message was from Alpha Blue, Admiral Drayson.
Hello, Luke. Now that things are a little quieter where you are, I wanted to tell you that I've located your missing droids. But I'm afraid you're going to have to pick them up yourself.
For days, Lady Luck had been fleeing before the Teljikan vagabond, staying over the horizon from the powerful and unpredictable Kella artifact. Two tasks had occupied them during that time, keeping tabs on the vagabond by means of the equipment at the abandoned wing for what they hoped would be the task force Pakpakat had summoned. But the ship that did finally appear on the scanners hardly looked like a New Republic fleet. "It's a civilian skiff," said Tysden. A display screen above their heads flashed on.
"This is Mudsloth, hailing the Lady Luck. Is Lando still aboard the vagabond?"
"Pakpakat, security!"
"Colonel, I'm all the assistance you're likely to get for a while, given the demands on the fleet at the moment. I think I can get the team off the vagabond, but I'm hoping for more than that."
Eccles interrupted. "Would it be possible for you to collect me before you board? I may be able to help you find some answers."
"I was hoping you'd offer, Doctor."
As the vagabond grew outside Mudsloth's cockpit viewpanes, Eccles looked nervously from it to Luke's face.
"How will you know if it's working?"
Luke closed his eyes. "We'll know if it isn't."
"Shouldn't we alert General Carrizin that we're coming in?"
"No signals. No sounds. No thrusters. Nothing that will disturb the flow." Eccles looked nervously toward the alien vessel.
But can't it see us just as easily as we can see it?"
Luke shook his head. "You're in a submarine, Doctor, not a spaceship. We're 500 meters under the surface and just floating with the current. They won't know we're there until we bump up alongside." The scientist received Luke's reassurances with a dubious expression.
"You've done this before, I trust?"
"I saw it done not too long ago, and I've been practicing all the way here. Relax, Doctor. I learned this trick from the best people in the business of hiding."
"Lando."
At the sound of his name, Lando, groggy from the gradual shutting down of his life support system, stirred and reached slowly for his comlink.
"What is it, Loba?"
"Someone is here. We are puzzled. There is a touch, and yet we cannot find the source."
I'll check it out."
Fatigue and hunger had left Lando in a state of permanent annoyance.
"R2, well, then let's go. Power up, R2.
The droid remained inert. Like 3PO days before, its power supply was finally exhausted.
"Ahoy, the ship."
A new voice crackled over the comlink.
"Anyone home?"
Lando blinked, trying to force his mind to recognize what it was hearing.
"Luke? Luke, is that you? What are you doing here?"
"Well, I could leave if it's not a good time."
"You leave without me, and I'll hunt you down and kill you."
Grabbing a liter of water from Dr. Eccles, Lando drained it so fast that his stomach knotted and threatened to reject it.
"Luke, can you believe it? This whole monstrosity is nothing but a museum."
"Go easy, Lando."
"A museum? And none of the treasures are real."
Luke and Dr. Eccles found Lobot curled up in a tubule, floating, his eyes closed. Luke asked, "Do you have any idea what we're looking at here, Doctor?" Eccles peered into an adjacent tubule and answered in hushed awe.
"These are the size and geometry of the killer remains we recovered from the ice."
Luke entered the tubule where Lobot was floating.
"Now, these don't feel like remains to me."
"Lobot, it's Luke. Wake up, fella. Your relief's here."
"Are you saying that they're alive?"
Eccles demanded. "This whole ship feels alive to me, Doctor."
"But these bodies have no limbs,"
Eccles protested. The creatures on the surface were quadrupeds.
I'm not trying to tell you what they are, Doctor. I'm just telling you that what Lobot reported is true. These things are alive. And this ship is alive.
Lobot was stirring by then. He spoke as if in a trance.
Waiting.
Waiting for what? The words came haltingly.
We wait for the thaw.
I think we need to break up Lobot's new friendship. Know anything about neural interfaces, Doctor?
Eccles grimaced.
Do what you think best. I'll wait outside.
After Lobot had been coaxed away from the tubules, after he and Lando had eaten and the droids had been repowered, Luke returned alone to the tubules. Hours passed before he rejoined the others on the skiff, whose comforts, however humble, proved to have great appeal to the space travelers. They were all there. Lando asleep in the bunk. Lobot stretched out on the floor of the systems compartment. 3PO strapped into the right-hand seat, and R2 contentedly plugged into both the data port and the power port at the interface board. Eccles was in the pilot's seat, bending over the ship's small data displays with a frown. He looked up when Luke entered.
I believe I have an answer for you now.
He sat back in his seat and pointed to the data display.
The moons are the key.
Luke approached. The moons they saw in the orrery.
Yes. With the assistance of Colonel Papakart, we've analyzed the recordings R2-D2 made the first time the expedition reached the auditorium and viewed the diorama. The orbits depicted for the moons turn out to be unstable.
Check me if I've missed something, Doctor, but Malta Obex has no moons.
Eccles nodded. But Keller did. Unremarkable moons, nothing to inspire a grand mythology, at least not until one of them fell from the sky.
Luke's expression was grave. The Ice Age is the result of a moon strike.
Yes. It would appear so.
Luke began to piece the mystery together. And the Keller saw it happen. They knew what lay ahead for them, and they used the warning and the time they had left to build this vessel.
The ultimate and supreme achievement of their species, Eccles said. They built this vessel and sent it away before the end came. When the expedition looked at the orrery, they saw this system as it was before the moonstrike, the destruction of the Keller, and the death of their planet under a blanket of ice.
What about those things in the interior, Dr. Eccles? Lobot keeps wanting to call them Keller, and now the ship has brought them home.
But there are only a few thousand of them on a vessel that could have held many more.
Eccles shook his head.
No, no, it cannot be. This is not an ark, or even a lifeboat. Those bodies are the controllers and protectors of this vessel, not its treasure.
Luke shook his head stubbornly. No, there's something more here. Turning away, he dropped gracefully through the open entry hatch. Catching a handhold on the hull, he catapulted himself forward, away from the skiff, and into the silence and darkness of the interspace. There, drifting slowly in front of the Keller gallery, he listened to the complex rhythms of the ship and allowed them to resolve to the deep fundamental pulse of its being. Then he extended himself toward the planet, quieting his own urgency and desire, seeking that most profound state of egoless connection in which everything could be heard without distraction or distortion. And suddenly, there it was. A collective heartbeat so faint that the slightest whisper of impatience would obscure it. With an exultant cry, Luke pushed himself away from the wall in a backward somersault.
What? What is it?
Exclaimed Eccles, who had followed him in.
The bodies you found. The Keller who roamed the ice. Those weren't the survivors. They were the dissenters.
What do you mean?
We were all wrong. This ship isn't a museum or a temple full of treasure or a lifeboat. It's a toolkit, Doctor. A toolkit for rebuilding a destroyed world.
Joy and wonder animated Luke's smile.
They had time to do more than prepare this ship, Doctor. They had time to prepare themselves.
That planet is not dead. There are millions of Kella buried in the ground awaiting the thaw. And we can give them that.
As soon as Mudsloth cleared the opening the Vagabond had created for it, Luke gave the thrusters one hard kick, then turned the skiff around so that all could watch the Kella vessel fall away behind them.
Are you sure you don't want to cloak us like you did before?
Ethel said worriedly to Luke.
I'd really rather not contribute personally to the warming of Malta Obex.
The Vagabond will not harm us,
Lobot said with quiet assurance.
It understands. It required the building of a new strand of memory code, but it understands.
Lando pointed out the viewport.
Look, it's starting.
The hull of the Vagabond had begun to glow, blue snakes of energy snapping along its length as the capacitance charge built up to a cascade. Then triple beams of energy stabbed downward, creating ionized tunnels through the atmosphere in which precious chemicals began to be renewed. The beams converged at the surface of the half-frozen ocean below, creating massive explosions of steam with towering plumes rising from the ice floes. The bombardment of the planet went on through Mudsloth's long climb toward its rendezvous with Lady Luck. When the two craft finally met and docked, Lando and Lobot escaped the skiff for the luxury accommodations of the yacht. But Luke and Eccles lingered, looking down on Malta Obex as the Vagabond, now a small thing in the distance, fell silent. Neither man spoke, but they shared a mood of awe and curiosity. When Luke closed his eyes and began breathing in deep, slow waves, Eccles noted it without comment. And he was not surprised when the Vagabond disappeared completely from view. He clapped Luke's shoulder approvingly.
You have been practicing.
Then he said wistfully,
I confess I want to stay and document it all. Most especially the day when the Kella begin to emerge. But this is best, to leave them alone. Will what you have done last?
I don't know how long it will last, Luke said, gazing down at the planet. The forces affecting the ship are complex, and my teacher said that my touch is still too heavy. I had to try, though. Try to draw the curtain and give them some time to heal, to build. But I want to come back. To meet them. I wonder how long we'll have to wait.
Give them 100 years,
Eccles said regretfully, knowing that that meant he would never return to Malta Obex.
Or 1,000. The Kella will not miss us. Their lives will be full without us. You have given them a great gift, Luke. A future.
He looked out toward the pale white disk of the planet.
Somehow I know they will make the most of it.
As the children ran ahead, Leia walked down the flower-lined path toward the house. A few moments later, she was brought up short by the sight of Luke carrying Jaina in one arm and Anakin in the other, with Jason at his elbow. All four were smiling broadly, though Luke's smile faded when he saw Leia's expression. Been to the hospital, I see. How's Han doing?
Better.
He's out of the tank now and looking more like himself. This was the first time I took the children. What are you doing here? Luke smiled ruefully. Belatedly accepting an invitation. He helped her put the children to bed. Then when they were finally alone in the warmly lit family room, she asked lightly,
Did you find what you were hoping to?
No. But, as happens sometimes, I found something else. I still want to know who our mother was, Leia. That still matters to me. Not knowing is an empty hole inside me, and some of what Akana told me would fill it so well that I still want to believe it.
But you came back.
It's the one little piece that I did find that brought me back. A lesson about love and family. From a woman I never met and probably never will.
Leia,
It's crazy for me to be chasing a hope from core to rim when you and these kids are right here, real as can be. And if you'd still let me be part of loving them and teaching them and sharing your delight at watching them grow, well, I'm the Jedi uncle you're looking for. Her eyes misting, Leia went to him and gathered him into a long embrace.
Welcome to my family, Luke. Welcome home.
This is Anthony Heald. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Tyrant's Test by Mike U. Mike by Culp Dowell. P. Mike Dowell by Culp by QB Mick by Culp Dowell. Or I look out in the...